Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You know, I've been talking about earned media value for quite some time on this podcast. My friends at Eisenberg have just raised the bar on earned media benchmarks with their Social Index. Social Index now gives you globally earned media values across a growing list of 6 geographies for all your KPIs across the top 7 social platforms: Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Snapchat, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube. You can now visualize these values for deeper analysis, and they have a look-back window over 2 years of historical comparisons. Social Index is updated daily. Don't get stuck with old data. Over 1,000 companies have used the Social Index to understand the ROI of their social campaigns. And if you work with a social agency, you should demand they incorporate earned media values into your reports. Get your earned media value for social content. Visit earnedmediavalues.com/Allen. Again, that's earnedmediavalues.com/ALAN.
For all of us, it's about predicting where the consumer is going and getting half of it right.
One of the things we want to do is create ads that don't suck.
Embracing change creates great possibility.
I'm Alan Hart, and this is Marketing Today.
On the show today, I've got Paul Cowan. Paul's the CMO of FreshBooks. He's not your run-of-the-mill marketing dude. He's over 20 years, he's held leadership positions at large corporations and startups. He's marketed phones, food, booze, toys, and SaaS products. And now he's bringing his unique skill set to FreshBooks, a cloud-based accounting solution for small businesses and self-employed professionals. On the show today, we talk about marketing, product experience, and the intersection between those two things and differentiation and how he thinks about it and the environments in which he's worked. We also talk quite a bit about marketing and community building, as well as his take on slacktivism, which is an offshoot of the purpose conversation and activism for brands and what it means for businesses. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Paul Cowan. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. It's great to be here, Alan.
So I thought we'd start with something maybe a little strange, maybe a little gruesome. I hear you shouldn't be around chainsaws. What's that story about?
Yeah, I'll avoid the gruesome part of it, but I like to kind of get outdoors and do a lot of stuff out in the woods. And it's about 10 years ago now, I was cutting down some trees and cording some wood. And I cut off about half of my lower left leg with a chainsaw. Luckily, everything's fine now. So it was all just kind of muscle damage and stuff like that. So it didn't actually go through the bone, but it was interesting because at the time I was at a startup in the SaaS business. And so I had like a soft cast, a boot for like about 2 months while everything healed up. And it was the greatest icebreaker you could ever have going into, we were pitching every day going out, whether it was for funding or whether it was just growing the business. And so our founder, the CEO of the company, he was really bummed out when I had to take it off because he didn't have the icebreaker. He almost wanted to have me keep wearing it around because it was a good way to start every meeting.
You definitely got everyone's attention, that's for sure.
Yeah, although it did take about 15 minutes to tell the whole story about all the sort of details. So we didn't have too much time to actually get into the business when we had to.
That's funny. Well, I'm glad you're okay now. I think most people can hear potentially in your voice, you're up in Canada and you're the CMO of FreshBooks. Tell everybody, what is FreshBooks? What do you guys do?
Yeah, we're located in Toronto, up in Canada, and then we have offices down in Raleigh, North Carolina, and then one over in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. So we're a cloud accounting platform, and we really just focus on helping small business owners manage their finances and their books. And you know, the big difference really between us and some of the other big competitors in the space are, you know, we've really focused on the owner. So some of the other folks have built their accounting platforms to focus on accountants and cater to accountants. But ours is really kind of just helping an owner get close to their finances and manage their day-to-day business.
What's been your path, I mean, to becoming CMO besides chainsaws and other SaaS? Where'd you get your start?
I kind of have like a very odd career path. You know, I've always stuck in marketing. It's been where I've been, but I started out in sales, but I really kind of moved my career into, started off in advertising and did a couple of years there and then moved over into the client side roles in marketing. I've always kind of gone between large companies and small startups, or have done consulting on my own, sometimes by choice, sometimes by force, just given the market situations and things like that. One of the consistencies in my career has always been, I've always been in and around technology. So it's always been a passion of mine. And so whether in the ad agency environment, I was working on technology clients, and then, you know, I worked at Excite at Home for a bit in the early 2000s before the dot-com bubble burst. And then was at a telco in a wireless company up in Canada, and started a SaaS company in the late 2000s in the social media software space, and did a food tech company in kind of the mid 2010s. And now I kind of find myself here over at FreshBooks selling accounting software.
FreshBooks. So my understanding is, I mean, I've known about FreshBooks for years. It feels like I may date myself here, but felt like originally you guys started off as an invoicing platform, and then at some point you expanded into the kind of more full accounting for owner space. And then more recently, you've gone through a little bit of a rebrand or a refresh of how you show up in the marketplace. Can you tell me a little bit about like that journey and maybe recent rebrand?
Like most companies, like they are derived out of some sort of founder pain. And so Mike McDermott, who is the founder of the company, he had a problem back when he was running his own business, which was overwriting an invoice using Excel back in like the early 2000s. And so, you know, he went out looking for a solution, and nothing in the market existed. So there were lots of big accounting and invoicing platforms that were made for enterprise. But, you know, at the time, there wasn't like a lot of effort put into building SaaS for small businesses, because there just wasn't a lot of money there. And, you know, you go back in time and you think about what the world was like in like 2003, and high-speed internet was still like a thing. It wasn't something that everybody had access to. So it was just a very different world. There wasn't like AWS didn't exist. And the world that we live in today is very, very different. So, you know, he set out on a mission to really kind of help reshape and change the world for small business owners. And so invoicing was the first thing. And then as clients came on board, and they obviously are going to demand more features, and the product evolves. And so it naturally evolved into the accounting space. And, you know, I think one of the things that's always been true to the company is really this like focus on owners and really kind of having this hyper focus on being able to understand the pains, like the true pains that small business owners have, and be able to build a product for them that's usable for them. And you mentioned we just went through a rebrand. So I've been in the role for about 16 months right now. And I did the cliche things that every CMO does. So we did a reorg and a rebrand. And the reorg was by design, because we had some challenges and we had some growth plans. And so just needed to do some re-architecture of what the department looked like. So that was by intent. When I came into the organization, I had no intention of doing any kind of rebranding effort, but the company had been on a 2-year path around a rebrand. And so it had been doing all of this like internal activation around it, getting all of the different folks within FreshBooks to contribute to, you know, what does it mean to help serve small business owners, and what are the promises that we can make to the customers and to the market as a whole. And so when I came in, I'm like, oh my God, like this is the opposite problem that most companies have. We have the most well-understood brand internally, and we just haven't done some things to make that known out to the market. So we did some things, refreshing some colors and refreshing the logo just to indicate to the market that, hey, there's a change going on. And it was really about a reaffirmation of our promise to the small business owner. So, you know, I was just kind of the catalyst to help just push it over the goal line. But I didn't have to do all the hard work, which was really around like the organizational change management around having everyone understand what it means.
That's really interesting, because to your point, it is par for the course for a new CMO to come in and rebrand. It came up on a prior episode I've done with Raja Rajmanar. He's the MasterCard CMO, and Raja calls it new bride syndrome, which apparently is like an Indian phrase or story that, you know, like you get the new bride in India and she comes into the household with the existing parents and tries to change everything. And it's a whole deal, apparently. So he calls it new bride syndrome. So, but what you described, that's how a rebrand should take place, right? Like it's going back to the core, internal out, reaffirming what your promise is to the marketplace, making sure that everyone agrees. And then the rebrand itself, like the refresh, if you will, of the identity is just a signal, you know, more than anything.
It was such an interesting thing to come into, because when I first came in, like within the other side of FreshBooks, what makes it kind of unique as well, and nothing that I've created, but it's there's a 4-week training program that goes on when you first come in. Everybody has to do it, and it's basically about 2-ish weeks, a week and a half of kind of like classroom sessions where you learn everything about the product, the company, the brand, the values. You know, doing scenarios and quizzes and that kind of stuff. And then you do 2 weeks of support tickets. So answering emails, picking up the phone, talking to customers. So the company inherently within how it operates is like super customer obsessed. And then you come out of it and you know, like all the problems with the platform, you know, where the bugs are, what the big pain points for customers are. And so that's just something that I was like, wow, this is so great. But, you know, when it comes to what we're doing externally, we're saying, hey, all in one accounting, and which is what everybody else in the market was saying. So we just have spent a lot of time just like recasting what that story is. Like, so externally we can tell that story, but it's truly amazing when you have such a well understood brand. And it was funny because we didn't really change anything. Like, you know, we didn't really change anything as it related to like what our promise was and stuff. We just fine tuned some of the words. So I laugh at it because I'm like, it was a project that's like, it really didn't do much, but it was just like a bit of editing, a bit of other work, and then just like kind of keep pushing it along. So it was, it's really remarkable when you get into a situation like that.
I applaud your efforts. I know externally it may not feel like a huge shift, but like over time companies can drift, right? And reaffirming, recommitting yourselves and all of the employees at that point in time is never a bad move. Well, you've worked at such a variety of different types of companies or serving different types of markets. How do you think about the overlap or differences in the product experience, the marketing that you know, used to communicate, and differentiation, if you will? You kind of highlighted a little bit of that as you were just talking.
I think that's it's an interesting area, and especially kind of in the world we live in today, that experience is such an important piece. So, you know, there's brands that I've always really admired, and you know, I look at brands like Virgin, and I read the first Richard Branson autobiography, and like back, it's like probably 15 years old now, but and really, you know, the mantra is really around like expect the unexpected, and really how you could take like standardized or very utilitarian types of industries and make them unique and magical. And that's kind of what everybody's chasing now, you know, trying to find magic moments or what they can do to really kind of identify these key moments within their product to be able to create uniqueness. And that's something I've always really tried to bring to light with all of the brands that I've worked on. I've been in the other side of the equation where, you know, I was in a wireless company. We just spent gobs of money covering the market. And we were one of the biggest ad spenders up here in Canada. But it was just about like, push it out. And it's remarkable because you can repeat something enough and people are going to believe it. I think that's pretty evident in terms of what's been happening over the last few years. But really, I think from a brand standpoint, what we need to do is really shift and then look internally and find like these bits of goodness that exist within the product experience to make those the real kind of key points of differentiation. So, you know, it's something that I love to do. There's generally like all these kind of like untapped resources or these wells that you can kind of drill into that can then reveal a whole bunch of stuff that your customers would love that you've never even thought of. And so I think that's like one of the big efforts that I'm working on right now within FreshBooks is to find that kind of stuff.
So you don't need to tell me as an American that if you've got a big megaphone and you just repeat the same thing over and over, people will start to believe it. But we know how that ends here now. not well. But it's interesting that you talk about that because I think organizations that aren't the big Goliaths or have potentially a monopolistic control over a marketplace or the megaphone because of the budgets and things like that. Like if you're not in that privileged seat, you can't afford not to look for those little bits of goodness that you've described and amplify those moments.
And it's like, there's some great examples of it from people who've done it from a product standpoint or have just like identified a pain point. Like I look at Dollar Shave Club, great example of a company that just identified a pain point. And, you know, we're able to just make better marketing to exploit that pain point. It's one of those things that I look at and I applaud it, whether they'd be like an ongoing brand that had like a bunch of staying powers, like questionable, but you know, they were able to sell and have their exit and do the things that they wanted to do. But it's really kind of that laser-like focus and the ability to harness kind of a power of just like identifying those key pains to be able to take things forward. We've been doing a lot of work. You know, I came into FreshBooks. I'm like, we have two kind of real resources. One is our customers. You know, one of the things that as having been a small business owner myself, like one of the things that you're always concerned with and universally is growth. And whether it's growing your existing client base or growing new clients, that's like what's occupying the minds of most owners, as well as how do you just manage the existing client base and the deliverables that you have. So you're not like, you know, obsessed about your finances and like what's going on in your accounting activity on a day in and day out basis. You're really kind of focused on how do I build my business. And so we've been really thinking about what we can do. And we've got this like powerful thing of like all of our customers who just really want to network with each other. So we're just kind of thinking of what are the things that we can do to be able to scale that up. We've hosted tons of events and across North America and in Europe where they just get together and they talk and they network and they look at how they can grow each other's business and they love it. And so now that with COVID and pandemic and less travel and all that kind of stuff, we're looking at how do we adjust that. But also we have like all of this data, like this income and expense data, and we can reveal that back to our customers to tell them how they're doing. And so that's like the big untapped resource that I feel like we have, where if we're able to tell a small business owner, hey, you're over-indexing in terms of the general market with respect to revenue, that's a good thing because then they could be able to plan accordingly. Or if they're under, whether it's like under in their region or under within their industry, they can know that too. And they can start to fine-tune what they're doing to be able to recover from that kind of stuff. So all of this is like the things when I look at like the experience, I'm like, how can we find these bits to really kind of drive at those pain points that people have?
I love the examples you just gave because like if you are a business owner, I've been in that seat too of having been an entrepreneur or even running my own consulting from time to time, like you have during your career. You do kind of want to know like, are my expenses out of line with what I should be looking like?
And you never know, right?
No, you really don't. And I really love the community aspect because, you know, as a consultant or, you know, a designer or whoever, right? Like you can use each other's services, but finding those people or finding your tribe, so to speak, that you can tap into and work together. That's kind of interesting too. Like it seems like you've got just kind of symbiotic relationship between the product, the users, and your marketing / community building. Do you think about it like that?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're definitely making it more of a overt strategy as it relates to how we've done things. The company has done it naturally just from a founder out. Like, Mike was very customer oriented and very service and support oriented early on. And that's remained something core to the company's values. And so I think from what I really kind of recognized when I came in is it was all happening, but just really kind of in disjointed areas. So what we needed to do was kind of bring it together to drive a bit more momentum. So it's like that fueled some of the reorg stuff, was just bringing parts of the company that weren't working together. And so that there could be much bigger impact with some of the activities that we were actually running. So it's really about, like, sometimes it's just like opening the doors and shining lights on things that people have been doing around the company, but not really realizing that they could be much bigger than they actually.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Than they actually were.
Let's shift gears a little bit here. There's another topic that came up when we were last talking. I was just kind of fascinated by it, frankly, and would like to share and have you describe it, and we can spend a little time on it. Is in the marketing realm, there's this whole movement around purpose and finding your purpose and taking a stand from time to time, if that fits your company model or value. But you mentioned something to me called slacktivism, which I'm like on the fence with purpose. Like, I think it can help unite, in particular, like your employee base and feel more engagement and things like that. I'm still on the fence as to whether people, like customers, really care, or maybe not care. Maybe they care, but do they actually, does it motivate behavior? And so tell me what you mean, what slacktivism thing is.
So the whole slacktivism thing kind of came out of when there was all this activity back when, like, some certain companies were behaving really badly, like companies like Uber and United. And there would be these moments in time where people would assemble and get together and do things, but against brands, but it never had any staying power. So it's this whole notion of like, hey, I posted, therefore I protested. Today, it's very different given the political climate and stuff. But specifically, I'm like referring as it relates to like brands and brand activity. So, you know, when there was like a moment where everyone deleted Uber, and delete Uber was a trending hashtag. But then a week later, it got really inconvenient. And so then Uber shot up in terms of their app store ranking because everybody started downloading it again. And if you look at United, when they went through their rough patch, when, you know, they were breaking guitars and killing dogs and beating people up on their planes, their stock price didn't take a dive at all, maybe had a momentary dip, but really kind of kept trucking along. And so there just isn't, like, to your point, what you're saying, like, do consumers care and are they voting with their wallets? I think convenience is always going to trump purpose any given point in time. Whether that's good or bad, it's just, I think, the reality. So, you know, I think if brands want to be purpose-driven, that just needs to be something that they do. And it's not a strategy in which they're going to acquire customers. It might be something that makes customers feel better. So it should maybe affect their NPS scores. I don't know if it's going to affect churn or not, because I think if you have a product that's like not as good, but you do a lot of good things, people might eventually leave you because at a certain point they need a product that works well. So I think that there's like this whole notion of this, like, slacktivism is a piece, and it just really needs to, if you're chasing purpose, purpose isn't a thing that's going to fuel a growth strategy. It has to be something that's really core to what you do. And and you just need to lean into it. Like we really, our purpose is like, how do we help small businesses succeed? And we want to do it at a very grassroots level. So, you know, we do programs like when COVID first hit, we launched a program called Roll Up Your Sleeves. And it was where we went to our customers and said, hey, if you need help with stuff, we've got 500 experts within our company that know things about customer support. They know things about sales, SEO, SEM, like any kind of performance marketing, just general business strategy. And so people started calling us, and they weren't like saying, hey, I want a handout and like give me a discount. They were genuinely saying, hey, my business is impacted. I talked to a guy down in Atlanta, a designer, and he serviced the theater and live event industry. And so his whole business was decimated. And he's just like, what do I do? It's like, I got to pivot and I got to keep going. Like what should my playbook be? And so we talked for, you know, we had a couple meetings, you know, probably for a total of maybe 3 or 4 hours we chatted, and was able to help him uncover different ways to go out and pitch and create kind of like packages of marketing product for him to go and take out to other industries, and like how to help event companies move into digital and do some other things. So we were doing things like this that were like super purpose driven, but one, it's hard to scale, and two, we couldn't tie that to any kind of like growth metric or anything like that. So it really just has to be something that, yeah, you love to do as a company. It's something that's like you're committed to, but isn't anything that's going to really be a driver of your growth.
It's helping me actually formalize my own thinking about like purpose. And there's a little bit of like, you're just doing the right thing, right? Like you're doing the right thing for your customers is what you just described, and not expecting necessarily anything in return. It's just good business.
And there's really kind of interesting examples, I think, of where consumers are moving more into the purpose space. Like, you know, if you look at like the stock price of Tesla versus GM and the market cap. So Tesla is far more valued than GM is. And it's because people are betting on the future of Tesla versus the future of GM. And so they're saying these guys are going in, they understand, and whether it's purpose driven or driven by where they believe the capital markets are going, it's really just, you know, some people are just betting on the fact that electric's going to take over and these guys are better suited to win. So whether it's purpose, whether it's just the upside potential, which who knows which way people are actually motivated.
Well, you know, your notion too, like where we started this purpose conversation and the delete Uber example, and where convenience just wins out, right? Like I still need to get from point A to point B, and I hate taxis, so Uber is better for me. I mean, another example that came to mind as you were describing that was the Peloton and the ad blowback that they got, I think a Christmas or two ago, and their stock dipped briefly, but then like ever since they've had record sales, and it's like, I still can't get over the utility of having my own spin gym or spinning class in my house where I don't have to leave.
And that's like every marketer chases like this notion of virality. Like whenever all the successful companies in the last 10 years have been able to grow through this, not through all performance marketing or brand or whatever, they've grown through some sort of virality, and it's usually driven from some sort of product experience. And then everybody just wants to, whether it's FOMO or tribe mentality, people just kind of like go to these areas and then help continue to perpetuate that. So, you know, it's a lot of it has to do with this like share growth and being first, or maybe not even being first, but helping kind of shift and make a market, which, you know, Apple is quite famous for. So it's just, you don't have to be first, but if you hit the pain points and you do it a little bit better than other folks, then, you know, you'll take off and be the market juggernaut in the space.
And that last thought I had on purpose as listening to your explanation of it as well, is that if you're not just doing good business, maybe purpose is really a band-aid for bad corporate behavior. You know, like we've lost our way somehow and we need to redefine our purpose and just be good people again. So anyway, being cynical, I guess here, but
yeah, it's everybody seeking some sort of penance for their behaviors over the years.
And because, you know, organizations are so big these days, you know, like the big companies, you kind of do need something to galvanize change if you're trying to change a culture that may have went astray from time to time.
Those are big problems and big challenges. And I think a lot of, for the most part, like I think the market moments have been kind of these things that have helped drive people to change, like that really kind of push the automotive sector to really kind of go into EV and focus on that as a core focus for the future. The financial crisis obviously changed a lot of behaviors and what a lot of fintechs started doing in the 2010s. So I think like all these market moments are definitely these kind of defining factors, and we're probably going through one right now. And there's going to be a lot of change through the market, whether it's political, social, or even just foundational in terms of like healthcare, education, things of that nature, that's going to be outcomes of what's happening right now. So it'll be an interesting time probably over the next 5 years. And as we get out of this kind of mess and we get back to, I don't want to say normal spending patterns in 2023 and 2024, I think the world's going to be a very different place in terms of what people are throwing their cash at.
Let's switch gears. Well, one of the things I love to do is just get to know the person behind the microphone even better. I have this favorite question. We may have already described this experience for you, but I'm curious if there's an experience of your past that defines or makes up who you are today.
I'm a mid-40s straight white male. So, you know, my experience has been one of privilege, and the experiences that I've had in the past, you know, are going to be very different. So if we're looking for patterns to help like other people kind of figure out where to go, that's always a bit challenging, but just wanted to, you know, acknowledge it, that my past has really kind of helped get me where I am today. And I'm just really focused on helping others kind of get to a position like I am. But I was like, I'm a Gen Xer. So I grew up through latchkey kid type of stuff, like where you had to do a lot on your own. But then also there was like this respect for authority and power that was ingrained into me. And so I think I worked early. I had a lawn cutting business when I was 12. I was bootlegging booze in high school as a side hustle. So I've always had like what I would probably look at as like a high risk tolerance combined with a desire to build stuff. And so that's really defined like my career, because I've always tried to go. I've always had, you know, I bought my first house when I didn't have a job, right after the dot-com bubble burst, because money was cheap. I was confident I could generate the cash to pay my mortgage, all that kind of stuff. But so I've always had this kind of combination of two things, which really has been like how I've approached my career, my career path.
Well, what advice would you give your younger self if you're starting all over again?
Probably buy GameStop and then sell it on January the 27th at 9 a.m. but I think it would be probably listen to my gut more. There's been times where I've listened to other folks who I thought were experts in areas, and I just like have had some intuition that they're wrong. And, you know, whether it was in a food startup and I listened to the food people a little too much and didn't listen about like how where my gut was telling me, like, get to MVP and really kind of disrupt this industry more. So, you know, I think that I just listen to your gut. If you have good intuition, it's generally the right one, and just follow that faster.
This next question is a little silly, but I enjoy asking it. Has there been an impactful purchase of $100 or less for you in the last, say, 6 to 12 months?
That's an excellent question. I would probably have to say I got a new Sawzall, a DeWalt 60-volt Sawzall, which has changed my life because I like doing construction projects on the side. And a lot of it has to do with taking things apart. And a Sawzall is the best weapon to be able to do any demolition. And I've had a corded one and a really underpowered battery one. And this one has changed my life in terms of making me far more productive.
And is this one cordless, like battery?
It's a battery, but it just lasts forever, and it's a life changer. So if you do any construction work, I highly recommend it.
Let's make sure you keep your toes away from it. Okay?
Absolutely. I wear steel toe boots, and I've got chainsaw pants now as well. So
awesome.
I'm well set up.
Learn the lessons. I like it. Stepping back, a couple end on two kind of more marketing-ish questions. Are there any brands or companies or causes that you follow or you think other people should be taking notice of?
Brands, I think there's a lot of the obvious ones. I follow a lot. Like, I mean, the main thing that I do is I like to read a lot of SEC filings. So
don't hear that often.
It's like annual reports and SEC filings are my favorite places to go to see what other people are doing. So they just reveal a lot about how someone has been able to either grow successfully or sometimes unsuccessfully. So the Casper one, the DoorDash ones recently, like they're great to just go in and see what was someone's growth strategy and what were they willing to pay and how are they willing to pay it. Also just how they're spinning their future growth. So it really kind of reveals a lot about not only a brand strategy, but the business strategy and what their playbooks have been to be able to see what's happening. So that's like, I love just looking at companies that are about to IPO and see where they're going. And the second, like causes, I've spent a lot more time in terms of participating in different groups or community connections around Black Lives Matter or just general BIPOC activity. There was a group, a very loose group called Pay It Forward that some people put together, which was just like a connection thing to help kind of help connect people and give them folks advice or whether it's career advice or business advice in terms of how to forward their careers or grow their companies and that kind of stuff. So I've been from a cause standpoint trying to invest more free time there in terms of connecting with people and forwarding their career goals.
Last question for you. What do you feel like is the either largest opportunity or biggest threat facing marketers today?
In terms of what I see as kind of the biggest opportunity or threat are both things. Like I look at opportunities and threats and crises together and really because kind of so we can capitalize on what's going to be coming out on the other side. So I see like, you know, the big things today are like the cookieless digital universe, what that looks like. The increase and the rise in no tracking, and especially as we're really kind of focused in terms of performance marketing, what that is going to mean to us and mean to our business. I think that there's like, you know, a desire to not give Google and Facebook as much money as we're actually doing. You know, they're great partners of ours, but, you know, we definitely over index in terms of how much we spend there. So I think like us, the area that I've been thinking about a lot is like us as brands, like so many brands are playing this attrition game in terms of trying to attract people to our websites and paying media companies to try to attract those people. But then we're throwing out most of the people that we're attracting there. So I've been really kind of thinking of how us as marketers can start to build, act more like media companies and build more of a coalition of marketers so that we can play the arbitrage game that the media companies do and that the lead companies do so that we can look at how we can capture and share and help each other's business, but then also thinking of it from a customer's perspective of what's in it for them. So if I'm going to share data with other folks in the SaaS space, what are they going to get out of it? And try to find like a really great value exchange for that so that they're getting a real value out of it. So that's like a huge area of opportunity that I see, but work needs to be done to help brands really think that way.
No, that's interesting. That's interesting. The cookie-less environment. I mean, not to spend too much time there, but I'd love to ask you a follow-up quickly. Like how do you think that that's going to shake out? Is it just a push towards whatever they call it, zero party and first party data, or do you feel like actually I'm probably going to have more tools at my disposal to think about how to measure the impact of my marketing?
So I think it's just more around like, so I think the first place is like, you know, companies investing more in their own data platforms. So I think that it'll help really drive the growth of CDPs, whether, you know, in that industry overall. I think that there's like on the media side, I think it's going to have like the effect of walling up Facebook, making it more expensive to buy within those environments. So I think it's actually going to make some of the existing companies, the primary, like the first party data companies, it's going to make them a lot stronger. And there's going to be a lot of new folks who are thinking around the systems. So for the most part, like as you look at folks like Google, they're going to be largely unaffected because the majority of their revenue is off of search and intent-based data. So yeah, like the ad network and the display network will suffer a bit, but overall, folks like that will be fine. So I think there's going to be like some effects on like, you know, website experience and the things that we can and can't do, but it's just going to be this like desire to get people to opt into stuff. So it'll actually make the internet quite a horrible place because we're just going to have a whole bunch of modals and pop-ups everywhere we go, just like asking for consent every time we go to anything. So if anything, it may actually reduce the amount of places that you actually want to go on the internet.
Great opportunity becomes great risk. Yeah. But Paul, I've enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, it was an awesome conversation.
Hi, it's Alan again. Marketing Today was created and produced by me with support from my team and podcast editors, sound engineers, and writers at Share Your Genius. Find them at shareyourgenius.com. If you're new to Marketing Today, please feel free to write us a review on iTunes or your favorite listening platform. Don't forget to subscribe on marketingtodaypodcast.com and tell your friends and colleagues about the show. I love to hear from listeners. You can contact me on marketingtodaypodcast.com. There, you will also find complete show notes, links to what was discussed in the episode today, and you can search our archives. I'm Alan Hart, and this is Marketing Today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.